All right, we should be live. So, welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy live chat, number 14. We are talking to Mr. Miguel Rodriguez, former curator of the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival and pending author. Welcome.
Hello. Well, thanks for having me back. This is my second time on your show.
Yes.
And should be interesting as many things have changed since the last time we spoke.
Yeah, I was looking at it. We interviewed you, did the long form interview back in 22, was it, or 21? Let me double check. It
must have been 21.
No, it was 22. August.
It was 22?
Well, you know what? Let me go back to the spreadsheet because...
Was it released in 22?
Exactly.
Ah, exactly. There it is.
I feel like it was probably produced in 21.
Wow. What? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I misread. So we recorded in January of 22 and released in April of 22.
Ah.
So
yeah, you had me right before my breakdown then.
On the cusp.
Yeah. I think I probably showed some signs of that even when we were talking.
You were a little stressed.
Yeah. I was distressed would be more accurate. Yeah, we can talk about that too. I'm pretty open about those things.
Okay. Yeah, for anybody who finds us later, the idea for these live chats, we interviewed Miguel, as we said, back in 22. Our long-form, quote-unquote, long-form Horror Makes Us Happy podcast, we do a sort of a more of a deep dive talking to each guest about what it is that they've been a fan of, and then through that, kind of piece together looking for common threads and see if what they have been a fan of can tell us anything about themselves as an individual, and then have a conversation about how their interests intersect with horror as a genre. And for Miguel, I think the summary of your call could best be described as rage, which we only really interestingly we only discovered at like very towards the end of the call. Like we were talking about a couple different other things, like empowerment and some other things, and then I forget how we landed on that word. But yeah, you did share that you had were dealing with a lot of anger at that particular moment in your life, and so. But the thing is that theme of the deep kind of conversations we're having there, we have this format where we follow the same questions, and it doesn't really make sense for a guest to come back and then sit through the exact same thing that we did then. So these live chats are a way for us to invite guests back to talk about what it is that you're currently working on and things like that. So
sure.
I guess I will hand it over to you there and say, so what have you been up to?
How's it going?
Yes.
It's going, how honest do you want me to be? It's going pretty terribly.
how often do you want to?
But, well, so I guess when we had that conversation, I do remember talking about rage, and I do remember one thing I admitted on your podcast was the only place I could go to find some inkling of joy was stories of people dying from COVID who had denied it. I think I remember saying that. And hindsight, that was the beginning of what would eventually be diagnosed in me of a mix of anhedonia and what would become post-traumatic stress disorder from not only experiencing the pandemic as it happened and the toll it took on me without my acknowledging it and just letting it consume me. But ultimately the trauma of losing my festival, bringing it, which is all my own doing, so that just makes it worse, but ending it and essentially ending everything that I had put my entire identity into for, you know, 12 to 15 years or whatever it had been. And so it was kind of like, at the time I was like, I killed my festival, which was like killing myself. Mm. So I attempted suicide 3 times.
Oh,
ended up in the hospital, just a couple of months after we would have recorded that podcast actually. And one benefit of going to the hospital was I finally was able to get a psychiatrist. Mm. But then I went a little crazy again, and I moved my family. We were talking about moving before we start recording. Moved my family to Vermont.
Oh, wow.
And then I ended up I sold my house here. We moved to Vermont. We were only there a couple months. I bought a house in Massachusetts, Western Massachusetts, started to feel myself a little bit there again. I was working at a cinema called Images Cinema. And that's when I started working on a memoir that I'm still kind of chipping away at. And we can come to that topic a little bit later. I also wrote a zine with the advent of AI and AI art. I started thinking, it's like, oh, you know what AI can't touch? It's just a handmade zine. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a zine. And I think I want to do that again because, in fact, I have. Yeah, this is my zine.
Cool.
Untethered number one. Yeah. Fun stuff. I literally made it by finding scraps of garbage and writing on them. Yeah. So this actually, I only have a few left. It was I started a speaking of organizing events, like in Massachusetts, I co-founded a zine fest there that actually they did a second one this year, obviously without me. I was only there a year, and then we ended up moving to San Antonio, Texas. And then last summer, I ended up getting divorced, moving back to San Diego so I could see my daughter still, and then getting laid off all in the same month. So like right as I'm starting to, busy with hell.
Yeah.
I was unemployed for 7 months, desperately trying to find a job in this economy.
Yeah.
And currently I'm working for a mortuary.
Oh,
nice.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, just, win-win.
Just weeks in. So
you got a job and it's a mortuary.
Yeah. I can, it comes back to there. So I can talk a little bit about that too, but I'm so new, but I'm getting my cemetery license and I feel pretty good at the cemetery.
lot of stuff there. And
there's so much. Yeah.
We may have to have you come back for a second chat because I think Google, we found out, does give us a hard limit of 1 hour on these calls once we had a third person. If it was just me and Chris talking, we could go forever. But sure. Once we hit three, it gives us a hard stop.
How long has it been already?
Like 15 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So we got 45.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm signing off. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. Have a good day. Wow. That's a huge jump just going from coast to coast, literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 4 states in less than 2 years. Yeah.
I can relate. I mean, I've moved around a lot my whole life.
Probably not unpacking because you get to the point where you look at the boxes and you're like, maybe not.
Yeah. It sucks. Yeah. It sucks a lot.
Yeah, I can relate. I've moved.
It sounds like things are doing better now. You got a solid job. You know, the zine. I love that. That's it's funny you mentioned that because there's a local bar here, Deviant Libations, and they did the same exact thing. They're just like, you know what? Fucking AI is everywhere. We're gonna bring zines back.
Yeah, yeah. Deviant Libations. I like that. That's a good name.
It's an awesome bar. It's
rolls very, right off the tongue.
It's very satanic themed. They got a little Baphomet statue above the bar.
It's kind of funny. Fantastic. I was thinking about doing something similar in an auditory sense. So Chris and I record music now and then, and I also do some solo stuff. But going through a lot of my dad's stuff, I have boxes of cassette tapes that I have recorded back in the 90s and stuff like that of myself playing music. And I had always intended to convert them from 4-track to digital. That was why I bought the first computer that I owned, like back in the 90s. And I just have never gotten around to it. And
well, it's only been like, 28 years?
Yeah, exactly. And now that we've got AI, you know, the thought is, well, shit, now if I put it online, it's just fucking going to get ripped by AI. So then, you know, cassettes are making a comeback. I was like,
They are. So are CDs.
Yeah.
So yeah. Purchasing of CDs has gone up this year.
Has it really?
Yeah. And it's gone up by younger generations.
Interesting.
Good.
Yeah. It's interesting. Very interesting.
So yeah.
Good for my friend who owns a record store.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I hooked up my tape deck down in the basement to listen to some of the tapes, and I have thought about you know, do I try to do like a boutique thing where I make my stuff only available on cassette?
Yeah, why not? I mean, you could always throw it on Bandcamp too.
I thought about that too, but the problem is that once you put it online, like companies can change their terms of service on a moment, and like then you're basically screwed. Like you have no recourse. Although, not to mention, you know, if I were to do the cassette thing, that wouldn't stop anybody from ripping it and then uploading it themselves the anyway. Thing. So it's exactly. like,
yeah, there's that.
Provided they have a cassette player.
Yes, you're right. Right.
True.
Yeah. So then you would have to hope that whoever has the cassette has the, what's the word I'm looking for? Honor, for lack of a word, to not do that. But so what was
We are just, there's the genie's a little out of the bottle.
Yeah.
And you have to accept the risk.
Yeah.
That that's going to happen. And how you react to that happening is really, that's what you have control over.
Resistance is futile.
Well,
we'll be assimilated
to some degree. I think there are going to be people who will stand by the original creator, though. Yeah.
One can hope.
I went to a metal band and all they had was cassette tapes. It's very metal of them.
Yeah, it's very metal.
Speaking of metal, for those who can't read it, we had asked Miguel about his hat. It's baby metal.
My baby metal hat. I've got a Hanabie pin there too, for anyone who knows. I love that band. The most metal merch I saw was they made their own tea and were selling bags of tea. This is the band Aether Realm from North Carolina.
Interesting.
So, little plug there. I enjoyed the tea. It was good.
On a, tea too. All right. Loose leaf?
Yes. Okay. You need the little ball.
Nice.
It's a good tea.
Tea brewer. Yes, it was good tea.
I'm the only one not wearing something metal related. Chris's shirt is for Sharp Knives, which is a comic
book
by
awesome
Anthony Cotter, who is also what is it, Acid Brain?
Acid Brain, yeah.
Yeah. Under his metal moniker.
Nice.
So what do you want to talk about? You've moved around a lot. Creative imaginings is something that you and I had chatted about a bit before scheduling this call.
I think the big thing, unless you're asking your co-host and not me.
I was asking you, actually.
No, he knows what I've been up to. It's boring.
Exactly, yeah. Building a tape. I talked to him earlier today.
Nice. Well, I mean, like, this, I can make it segue actually pretty easily, because one of the things we were talking about is where art belongs in this world right now. And I think that the more it gets kind of commodified, the more there will be some sort of resistance to it, even if it is at the boutique level. Maybe we resign ourselves to boutique level to some degree. I don't know. But that kind of, it's just, the world wants us to think of art as a luxury. Mm-hmm. And it's not. And that thing I just said is something I have been actively trying to reconvince myself of. So if we go back to 2021, 2022, the thing that really made me fall apart and end my festival, which was doing well, was I lost sight of that. You know, if you had the conversation with me in 2018, I had a fervent, almost religious belief that there is a power in what I was presenting. There was a power my artists had to make the world a better place. And with everything that was happening in the pandemic, I lost sight of that and despaired that I had just dedicated my life to a lie. Mm. And so I am trying to recover from that voice that was telling me that, which was a very loud voice at the time. Right now, I'm back in San Diego, and it's fortuitous that we're having this conversation now, because in San Diego, our kind mayor, Todd Gloria, and his administration has decided to cut public arts funding by a dramatic degree. I think it was, I don't have the numbers with me, but it was something like 33 million to 2 million, which is devastating. And there's quite an outcry from the arts community, of course, and a lot of people, a lot of letters written, including one that I wrote. And there's still an outcry going. And it's just one more symptom of what I was talking about the world wants us to think of the humanities as a luxury. And I started working on this idea for a show. I'll just use that term. I guess we can say podcast. We are doing a video format like this called Creative Intervention. And the whole idea is to talk to people, artists and art audiences alike, about just have them tell stories about a time that a creative work, whether it's a song, a band, a movie, a book, whatever, saved them in some way. Whether it saved them from suicidal ideation or something a little less extreme, but talking about, you know, really digging into what it does for people on a storytelling level. And so right now the job is finding those people and finding who to talk to and getting those stories, because I want it to be really personal and really real. And we recorded a couple of episodes in order to kind of galvanize the format. The first episode is me telling my story. And then the second episode will be my co-host, Ikoi Hiroe, who is a therapist here in San Diego, telling hers. And well, so I did want
to... You're a tough act to follow. That's, how are you going to do that?
Well, it's nice. She's also very smart and mm-hmm. has a great head on her shoulders and all, and a professional, like a mental health professional,
right.
Which I really wanted. To join me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Once I get going, I can talk at length about anything, really. But it's been harder to get going lately, and that's what I'm trying to find myself again, because that person who you talked to me at the, you know, the Armageddon of myself. That person who I was just before then, it feels like a different person. But I don't know. I think obviously that still is me, and I need to figure out how to get that person back. It's like I've been living my own horror, psychological horror, for 4.5 years now, if not more, maybe 5. And I'm kind of like sick of it. And I really do need some kind of creative outlet. And my creative outlet as a film festival director and a curator was about fostering conversations. Like, you know, that was really my favorite part of that, was moderating conversations, having Q&As between the audience and the filmmakers. And I was really good at it. And, you know, I've been to many film festivals where the Q&A starts and half the audience gets up and leaves. That never happened at my film festival.
I've been to those too, and it kind of sucks when, like, it's just lackluster at the end of it when you have the Q&A, because I love the fact that often the filmmakers are in the audience and they let you know the filmmaker in audience with you. But yeah, at the end, just nobody really asks any questions. Like, half to sometimes more than half just get up and leave. And
well, the first thing I don't do as far as that goes is I don't say, does anybody have any questions?
Okay.
That's the worst way to start a Q&A.
It's the death knell.
Yeah, it's the death knell. You start the conversation, and honestly, you start the conversation with the audience first, mm-hmm. and then the filmmakers, and then you bring them together. That is a way that it's inclusive, and the questions are not really, I mean, eventually a lot of the questions from the audience might go there, but I'm generally not interested in any kind of art form, including film, about like, what was the budget, blah, 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 blah. I want to know what you're expressing, like what feelings are you getting across and right. why and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I could make a filmmaker cry on stage, then I feel really good mission about accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah, mission accomplished. And it's happened a couple of times.
No, it's good though, like you're asking the questions that the filmmaker or the artist would want to hear. You know, it's not like how much was the budget, like you said. It's what was your message? What is your purpose here? Because a lot of people don't ask that. That's kind of the purpose of the film or any art, isn't it?
Yeah,
I hope so.
It's funny that like we don't take pride in it exactly, but there have been a couple guests that we've talked to where things have gotten pretty heavy, and I can think of at least one that did tear up a few times. And mm-hmm. it's how do you say it? It's we're not taking pride in, you know, having a creator cry, but it, you know, if you're reaching that kind of an emotional honesty, you're talking to someone about something that's authentic. I think that's really the pride there is there of saying, you know, this is an honest conversation, not just like surface level.
Yeah. A lot. That's all I want there to be something there. Even if it's something like if the art is kind of silly, you know, it doesn't matter. Like there's a reason for silliness too. There's a purpose to silliness. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really interesting to get at the heart of that, you know.
If for no other reason than just resistance.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always about resistance. Mm.
You said something earlier that I made a note on. Well, a couple of things, actually. You didn't share specifics, and I'm not asking you to, but so my father actually also passed from COVID in late 22, December of 22. So it was, we interviewed you in January, and then he passed in December, so the other end of that year. So I can definitely relate to the stress that, I mean, I was undergoing stress even prior to that. Yeah. But yeah, it continued thereafter. And then it took 3 years for the estate to close because there were issues with that. It just a bunch of stress. The other thing that you said something about luxury, and it reminded me of a quote that I had read not too long ago. And it's kind of interesting because it was, you know, aside from the artistic thing, with the economy being what it has been over the last year, there's been a huge squeeze in general. And this quote that I read said, the worker must have her bread, but she must also have her roses. And the context of that quote was that, you know, the whole argument about, you know, conservatives bitching about people on food stamps buying, you know, lobster tails and steaks with their food stamps. And it's like, well, fuck you. You know, it's their choice what they want to spend their money on. And then, you know, have the argument of, well, it's not really their money and yada yada. But the whole point is that, you know, it's not enough to just work all day and then sleep and do it again the next day. You have to have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And so in this case, we're talking about horror, we're talking about podcasts, we're talking about a bunch of different things, but what that quote unquote luxury is different for every person. And right. if you try to squeeze that out of everybody's life, then what the fuck is anybody even living for anymore?
Well, you know, to bring it to horror, so thematically part of your podcast, I mean, horror for me, I may have talked about this the last time we talked. Horror for me is about, I called my zine Untethered, and I forget exactly where I got this use of that word. It was from a book about building empathy. And you know, what the arts can offer is untethering. In other words, you untether yourself from your ego or yourself, and you experience the world through a character or through someone else's eyes. And that can be an empathy building exercise. Now for me, and one of the reasons the Horror Film Festival was a big part of my life was that empathy building exercise was central to the purpose for to our mission statement, to our value statement. And I think horror is really good for this because horror is an inherently emotional genre. It's not very intellectual per se. Not that it can't be, but that's less important. And getting to that kind of primal, visceral emotion of fear or anxiety or all the myriad negative things that horror can foist upon its characters, being able to relate to that in some way is, I think, very powerful. When, you know, horror fans know this, I think. I think people who go voraciously to horror films or read the books or pick up the comics know this almost instinctually. If you say this to someone who's not, you get looked at sideways and they don't understand it at all. And I think that's very interesting. It was a joy to me in the festival time when a person of the latter variety, a light bulb went off a little bit. Mm-hmm. About, okay, I can see what you're talking about here. That was always very pleasing to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think any art is for everybody. And so not everybody's going to be a horror fan, yeah, or a metal fan or punk rock fan or whatever. I mean, but it is, for me, it's helpful to lose yourself a little in order to care about someone else. Mm-hmm. Because like you were saying about, you know, these people living off of our taxes and just sucking up all of the wealth of, you know, the money and living on welfare and how dare they get a flat screen TV, blah, blah, blah. It's like that is that kind of cruelty that I just.
Meanwhile, you've got a fucking yacht. Like,
yeah,
that has multiple flat screen TVs.
That kind of cruelty I will never understand. And I think it is greed, but it's beyond greed. Okay. I think our system, this is very political, and our system is designed by a wealthy elite to give folks who are not in the wealthy elite someone to snap at. Mm-hmm. So that their own situation seems less untenable, right? There's always a top-down ire from the hierarchy.
The chosen enemy today?
Who's the chosen enemy today? Whether it's based on race or gender, there's the working class worker who slaves for 12 hours to a faceless boss making all that money off of them and then goes home and yells at his spouse or his children. I think that is built into the system. That is on purpose. It gives him a sense of power.
I don't know if it's so much built into the system. I don't know if it's so much built into the system as built into humanity. I think that even without the current system that we would have in place, that's how humans are wired in a way that it's distracting. I think as humans, many of us will fall into that kind of distraction by nature if we don't have someone to remind us to take a step back and look at the bigger picture.
Is part of the purpose of art then to help us go beyond our wiring?
That's an interesting thing. So,
because the wiring is it's some low hanging fruit. I think you're right to a degree.
Competition pattern recognition. Yeah, that, mm-hmm. that does seem to be like in our nature, as far as like it being just part of civilization for who knows how long. That competition, and it's based in pattern recognition too, because that is just one of the base core things about human beings. We're pattern recognition machines.
Yeah.
And in pattern recognition, we see that our thing is less than that thing. So we must change. We must fix. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think point being of this mini rant. Conflict is just in our nature.
Mm-hmm. And well, like Miguel said, the question there is, can you get the other person to see the pattern?
Yeah. And that's where it takes a third party. And, you know, luckily we are a society of many individuals. And, you know, you can have conflict. Conflict will always be there, but there's also an outside observation, luckily, that someone else can say, hey, maybe this conflict isn't a good idea.
Now, whether or not you can get someone else to see that, that's the question.
That is the question. That is the question. Yeah.
You said something else that I thought was interesting, which is, it ties into this a little bit, that we were talking about basically indie art and you know, the response to, you know, trying to make everything so expensive that even art is a luxury. And I think that we're going to see a lot of that, not only in art, but in every industry, really, that, you know, maker spaces and things like that for physical items, that if the powers that be make everything so fucking expensive that nobody can actually afford anything, well, then how do you live? You've still got to get things done. And so then, you know, it reverts to indie or, you know, trade networks or bartering. Like, survival is still necessary. It's just a matter of how do you make that happen. And in the case of art, it's going to, I think, foster a lot more of the, I want to say, what's the word I'm looking for? Like local grassroots indie scenes everywhere. You know, there's a word for it that's escaping me at the moment. But it kind of ties into what you were saying.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we discuss the value of those things and that there is a value that is not necessarily tied to monetary value. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, whether it's a band or a filmmaker or what have you, if they do something that moves you or you think is kind of incredible, but they don't make any money off of it, society at large deems their work worthless. Mm-hmm. That worth is tied only to material. And I would like to talk about art in a way that is not the only consideration. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I would like to talk about with the show that I want to do. Which is to find the value in things that is not just, hey, they made the billboard, you know, like, whatever. If they're still working a 9-to-5, but they're still playing at a spoken word, you know, open mic night, then that still has value. Mm-hmm. And I want to make that part of what I want people to get from it. You look very confused.
Sorry. No, someone just joined chat, and I was very confused by what they put, because I recognize it as a quote from some comedy and potentially also a song that was sampled, but didn't necessarily relate to the conversation we were having. And so the confusion was, how does that relate to the conversation?
What happened?
What show was that from? Relate to? What's that?
What doesn't that relate to? It's cake.
Well, the sample is the quote was Who Wants Cake, which Venetian Snare sampled this in one of their songs, and it was
the original sample was from,
I can't think of the name of the show, but it had Stephen Colbert.
Right. Citizens Brigade, I want to say. That or Strangers with Candy. I think it's Strangers with Candy.
Oh, Strangers with Candy. Wow. Yeah, that's going back.
Mm.
So, but yeah, how that connects to what we're talking about, that this is escaping me.
Let them eat cake. I don't know.
Maybe, actually, yeah, that could have been it.
I will say that. There you go.
Yeah,
I think
quote that was never actually said.
I'm gonna stare it back now. I think there is definitely an aspect of art where, you know, it's whatever is considered monetized is more important. But I still think, and I don't know if this is naive hope of me, but that, you know, there is still that purpose of art that 15-minute warning. Boom.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Art makes people feel good. Art good, purpose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how do you put a dollar amount to that? Just like how do you put a dollar amount on the Amazon rainforest? You know.
That's the thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe we should come up with some system to where like art is. No, that wouldn't work either. Art is like government funded, so you don't have to like worry about getting.
We've already tried art. That.
It works well in other countries.
Yeah.
And that's part of what gets frustrating. Mm. You know, when I found out, well, actually, when it was kind of announced, I think, about the new budget proposal for here in San Diego, I went up to Los Angeles, actually Downey, town of Downey in Los Angeles with my daughter. And a friend of mine from the festival days is Flora Cheng. She's a composer. And mm-hmm. she did compose. We showed a animated short called Toe that she did the music for. And it's really good. But she just, she had the world premiere of a three or four movement symphony that she composed. Nice. And it was awesome. And yeah. It was, you know, free to the public. And we went to the Downey Symphony. And there were a lot of people in the seats. And it was my daughter's first time seeing the symphony, and she was blown away by it. And it's a very good symphony, by the way, Flora Cheng Moth. You can see the first movement on YouTube. But I was sitting there, having just heard about the proposal, about all those cuts, and just sitting in that symphony, which was, of course, you know, they have endowments and bequests and all that, but they are publicly funded as well. And just like... being so humiliated for San Diego. Mm. That's like, look at this beautiful thing that San Diego says is not worth it. And it's also increasing the budget of the police force by like, you know, 13% or something. So, you know, it's not like, anyway, I can see where some of the money can come from, but.
There's a lot of money being spent on a lot of stupid things right now. They could go to better things like art, but. We're in a glacial slide into 1984. It's just going to be this for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I think. Sorry, I think that's true. Sometimes. I think that is definitely true. But
I just wish it would go faster. The slow pace of the awfulness is what gets me.
No, I got to flood the zone.
We could go faster and just burn it all down. I choose violence.
Yeah. Going back to Untethered, it was kind of funny when you were describing how you came up with that name, because I don't know if this came up in our prior interview, but this has come up on some of our other interviews where I was introduced to the idea that in Hindu mythology, each god has two faces. There's the wrathful aspect and the benevolent aspect, and which one you see is dependent on whether or not you are ready for the gift that they're coming to give you.
Okay.
And so when you first described Untethered, before you got to how you described it, my first initial thought was the fearful part of being untethered from everything that you had described being untethered from.
That's why I like the word, is because when you hear untethered, that is the first thing I would think. And I think it's the first thing most people think is I'm coming untethered from my sanity, right? I'm losing control. I'm spiraling. Sometimes that word is used in that context. And I just realized that on the inside cover of the book, I do say, I got it. The book is called The War for Kindness by Jamil Zaki. And I think it's worth reading, Building Empathy in a Fractured World. But there's a very brief chapter on the arts, and he admits in there that it's brief because all the other chapters have a lot of empirical data to go with what he's saying. And the thing that makes the arts such a difficult sell for a lot of people is it's difficult to have empirical data on mental health. It's difficult to have empirical data on sociological benefits. It's difficult to have empirical data on how it makes you feel or that kind of thing. And that's true. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I want to talk to people about this is it's not empirical sometimes. Sometimes you need it to be just a conversation.
That's one way to approach it. Before recording this via email, you and I had talked about the fact that I'm in the process of writing a book to kind of gather what we've learned from doing Horror Makes Us Happy for the last 5-6 years and some of the trends. And in the introduction for that book, there's something that I want to write in there about empirical data and what I refer to as, or what is referred to as, soft science. And the thing that I want to express there is that, to me, the term soft science is only, what that really means is it is something that is so complex that we can't wrap our heads around it yet.
100%. I agree.
And if you think about, like, describe a situation. You've got an actor, someone doing the acting, a recipient, the location that happens in, but then you could, there's this long string of variables that can be added to it, like what time of day is it? Are there any witnesses? What's the relationship between the actor and the receiver? What are the relationship between the actor and the witnesses, or the receiver and the witnesses? And even if you only have like a 0 or a 1 value, two values in here, binary numbers, you know, once you start reaching, you know, 10 digits, the numbers become astronomical. But in reality, it's not just a 2-value system, you know, it's infinite. And, you know, just like, computers have only been able to figure out how to play chess or master chess within the last couple of years, and Go within the last couple of years. And the quote unquote problem space of the game of psychology, it's so vast that it's to me, it's not a soft science. It's something that we not only can not wrap our heads around it, we can't even design computers that can wrap their heads around it yet. And it's this thing that's, you're going to say something?
I mean, yeah, you're diagnosing the problem from the, or not problem, but you're diagnosing the subject from using the subject. And if you're talking about a computer, you're diagnosing the subject using a computer that was designed by the subject. So yeah, you can't escape that self-referential part.
Maybe, but I forget why I brought that up. there was something you had said about.
Well, I do think your ultimate point is what is touted as hard science, which are things that have numbers attached to them, the quantifiables. It's actually, in actuality, that is the easier thing to understand than what we're talking about.
Right.
Is the you know, ethics, what it is to be a human being. Mm-hmm. You know, this kind of ties back to, you know, whether or not a lot of the inequalities that we have are built into the system, which I definitely think they are, and how much of that is also part of our nature and how we're wired. I would like to see how maybe we don't have to act upon that. So
go against your programming, so to speak.
I guess. I mean, I was never programmed that way, so it's difficult for me to understand. I'm not a competitive person. I never have been. I don't have trouble sharing my feelings like a lot of dudes do. I don't like see things as a zero-sum game that a lot of these people do. I like cooperation and collaboration. I think a lot of those are some of the traits that come with me, you die.
Well, one of the other things that I want to put in this introduction is to talk about how that's the way that we make it easier to deal with these infinities is, you know, if you think about math, if you're multiplying a string of numbers together, if you make one of them zero, it collapses the whole thing to zero. Can't multiply by zero, everything turns to zero. So that's black,
zero immediately.
So black and white thinking is saying, you know, okay, it's never okay to murder, it's never okay to eat meat, it's, or it is always okay to hate this person. You know, once we start thinking in absolutes, then that summarizes the infinities for us in a way that is easier to handle for some people. That's a whole other topic. Well, we are coming down to the wire here. So before
yeah, 5 minutes.
Before we get cut off, I want to suggest that everybody go to hormixasatbeat.com and look for Miguel's full interview. If you go to hormixasatbeat.com, go to the episodes page, scroll down to where Miguel's page is, click on that link. There should be a player there that will have his full interview, his bio, links to whatever it is that he wanted us to link to. If there's new stuff that you want us to link to, just let us know and we can add that.
You know, I did create things for creative intervention that I haven't put anything up on yet, but shoot, maybe you will be the first revealers of that. So I'll throw some stuff up.
Okay.
I love the sound of what you guys are doing there. So yeah. That would be an honor.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we'd love to participate if there's any room for us to assist in any of that.
There is. I'm still interested in that. I know I mentioned it in one of our emails. I know that you have a lot of back conversations that you could talk about and, you know, whatever you're writing about in your book. But, any insights or stories about the benefits of this that are soft science-based?
You know, there's a former guest of ours who shared with me privately that after our conversation, it prompted him to get counseling and that it ended up apparently benefiting his life in some way. And I have debated on whether or not to reach out to him to ask if he'd be willing to share more about that. I think maybe I will do that.
Yeah. It's worth asking. You can always just get a no.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say ask, and if, you know, no is an option. Yeah. Totally acceptable option.
Well, and even if they say no, I mean, the whole point is that sometimes just the conversation is beneficial. Even you don't have to go to counseling after you talk to us. Just having the conversation sometimes is nice.
I mean, you could benefit from counseling whether or not they talk to you. So.
That is also true. Yes.
Counseling is beneficial.
Yes.
What else do we got, friends?
I don't know. Every night Chris hosts a live stream on our Discord server. Which will be in about half an hour.
I didn't know you had a Discord server.
We do.
Yeah.
It's actually called Horror Makes Us Happy.
Good.
And yeah,
Jump on.
Cool. We have a special survivor role for any of our former guests who do join the server. So we'll give you
nice.
A
nice.
But yeah, Chris has his horror-themed webcomic Pieces. And every Sunday at 9 o'clock Eastern, he live streams himself drawing and chatting about that.
Awesome. No, that sounds amazing. That'd be great.
Cool.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Well, Pieces.
Yes.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Yes. Literally. Cool. Well, we'll be in touch via email and follow up via about the creative imagining stuff. And like I said, if there's any links that you want us to send us, we can update your bio page with that. And you're also welcome to come chat with us again whenever you want.
Well, let me actually accomplish some things before the next one, and that'll be good. It's always fun. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Cheers.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.